My name is Sharon. I'm a compulsive debtor. Hi, and I'm so humbled and honored to be here tonight to share with you. I have had barely any sleep last night. For those of you who know my situation, I lost my beloved dog last night. Yeah, so it's been rough, but I can't think of a better place to be. And I have felt the love in this room so much that I'm just so grateful to be here. So thank you. So I was born a debtor, and I really was. And from my earliest memory, I remember looking around and thinking everyone had more than me, and everyone was better than me until proven otherwise. And I really remember this, and part of that was true because I'm the oldest of seven kids, and my parents had seven kids in 9.5 years. So I got kind of got pushed aside really quickly. But, you know, I was really, and it's really interesting because at my mother's 80th birthday a couple years ago, 5 years ago, she said, you know, and she went through all of her kids and, you know, in verse order. And she said, you know what, what I really like most about you is you always were able to take care of yourself. And I was like, everyone else got like such, you know, like nice things. But, you know, like, oh, you're a wonderful mom, or you're, you know, a talented artist, or you're so kind and loving. I was able to take care of myself. But that was the truth. And I did from a really early age. I was in, well, it's another program, but I was a parenting child to myself and to my siblings. And, but you know what? It all works out the way it's supposed to, as we all know. So I compared and despaired at a really young age. And the truth is, we had plenty. And, you know, out of all those brothers and sisters, not all of them were looking around, looking at what other people had, you know, how other people were better than them or, you know, whatever. But I did. So that was a big hallmark for me. And one of the things that happened for me early on is that I realized a way to get out of the house was to play sports. So I started really early, and my grandmother lived with us for the first, I guess, 8 or 9 years. Well, I grew up in Washington, D.C., for the first till sixth grade. And she lived with us, and she, like, really helped out a lot. And she provided a lot for me, like, all these dance lessons and gymnastics and, you know, all kinds of stuff, skating and swimming. And I realized, all right, that's really good. You know, that I can get away from this chaos and drama by, like, doing sports. And we all did it. You know, it wasn't just me. But there were certain things that I became really good at. And one of them was swimming. And and I'm going to kind of fast forward here, but to get through the what it was like and hopefully focus on more of the recovery. But it is kind of important. So then we moved, and we moved to Massachusetts when I was in sixth grade. And that was very traumatic for me because I was bullied. I was different. I was bullied. And that really stuck with me. So, you know, I can really relate to bullying because I was bullied. And because I was different. I was different. I was geeky. I was smart. I was, you know, not, like, especially popular, and I really felt that. So not, you know, so, but I compensated for that in a lot of different ways, and one of them was to play even more sports. And then what ended up happening is the more that I played the sports, I was good at it. One sport in particular, really good. And I was, like, pursued that one. So then people started liking me because I was good in that sport. And then they wanted me on their team. And, you know, so then they liked me for doing something and not for being something. So there was always that disconnect for me of, like, well, they don't really like me, but they want me to be on their team. And now I'm okay because I'm good at this sport. And I'm getting some attention because I was really good. And I was a really amazing swimmer. Who knew? You know, and actually I was first a diver. I was a really good diver. And what I realized was that I was judged a lot, and I didn't like it, and it was very subjective. So, you know, oh, you're too this, you're too that, you're not good enough. You know, it was like, and I realized at a really young age, like 8 or 9, that I didn't want that. I didn't want to be judged. I had enough self-esteem problems without being judged about how I looked and how I was. So I really rotated into the swimming. And so what happened was, is I'm going to fast forward a little here. I became really good at the swimming. I was recruited a lot. I swam for like an AAU swim team. And this was when girls didn't really play sports. And I'm 62, so, you know, it was a long time ago, like in the 60s. And so it was odd that a girl would want to play sports, but I have 5 brothers, so it was okay, you know, because we all played sports, and my sister did too. So some people came, some coaches on the AAU team came up and said, if we had a daughter that swam like that, we would move to California and really train, you know, we would get her, you know, she'd be in the Olympics. And my parents said, that is the most ridiculous thing we've ever heard. She's not anything special. You know, and they said it to me. And so what ended up happening is I would be traveling to all these events. And I would go with other people's parents because my parents were busy. And I would be in the car with the people. And their kids would be the alternates. And I would, like, go slower so that their kid could swim. I was such a people pleaser. You know, it was really kind of sad, you know, so, but, so, yeah, I had this whole thing, you know, but in any event, so I'm going to fast forward to high school, and I was really, and I also played tennis. I was a top-ranked tennis player in Massachusetts, singles and doubles, but, so I was, it was Title IX in 1972, and I was heavily recruited for swimming, and what ended up happening, the short version of this is my mother thought I should go to the community college. My father thought that I should go to the Jesuit college that he went to, and I had no idea what to do, and my father told me, you should take out all the student loans you can because this is an investment in your future, and my mother told me, so I had one deprivation angel on one side and one debtor on the other side of my shoulder, so my mother said, you should go to the community college and live at home, and there was no way in hell that I was going to live at home, let's just say. So I ended up going to a school in New York that did not offer a swimming scholarship, that did not offer any athletic scholarships at all. And I knew there was something in me that knew that I couldn't continue this human doing rather than human being. So I went, and I did swim, and then I picked up more sports. I played a lot of sports, and I was really, I loved it. It was really great. And when I moved to New York, because my father told me, he goes, you're not going to fit in there. Those people are high-powered. I went to New York, and I never looked back. I lived there for 35 years, and I feel like a New Yorker. Even though I root for the Red Sox, and I would never root for the Yankees, I am a New Yorker. You know, New England Patriots, Boston Red Sox. All right, so, like, that's what happens when you live in New England. I know there's some New Englanders here. Yes! So what I thought also was that I still did think that they sort of secretly recruited me for my swimming. I didn't get there on merit. And that they were going to come to my dorm room door one day and knock on the door and say, you know, we've made this, like, terrible mistake, and you need to get your stuff and come with us. So I compulsively overworked. I remember the one day, the one semester, and I took more extra courses, and the normal level of courses was 4. I took 6, and, you know, a lot of sciences, and I was a science major, and, you know, the whole thing, and labs, and I got an A-, and I, like, almost had a mental breakdown. And, like, I went, because I went to get help, because I realized that was not, you know, normal. And the person said, you know, do you realize that most people here don't get all A's? I said, no, I did not know that. You know, I thought everyone got A's. But so I became more of an overachiever. So I'm going to fast forward because I realized at a very young age that the way that I needed to take care of myself, because I was very good at taking care of myself, my mother was right, was that I needed to make my own money. And I knew, and I started babysitting really young, and got paid for it, not with my own family, because my mother, in her wisdom, and this is one thing that she was very wise about, she never asked me to babysit. Like, you know, there's a lot of, like, Irish Catholic families where the oldest daughter is the babysitter, and that was never me, and they said that that was like a conscious decision on their part, which was one of the probably the few conscious decisions that they made. But in any event, but I do come from, like most of us, from a dysfunctional, or I should speak for myself, I come from a dysfunctional family. Don't ask, don't tell. So we didn't talk a lot. My father was an alcoholic. You know, there was some sexual abuse in my family, not me, but my brother in the Boston area in the 1960s and 70s. And the thing that just always got me was that nobody believed my brother except for me, and I knew that he was telling the truth. So I planned my life around advocating for people who have been wronged, not believed, and that the sense of reality, like gaslighted really, and they didn't have that term till recently, but like, oh no, that isn't true. And that's kind of goes to my story a little bit, which I'll get to hopefully shortly. So I ended up getting a career, doing well. So I come to DA kind of backwards. I knew what I wanted. I wanted to make money. I wanted to be self-supporting through my own contributions, even though I didn't know that's what I wanted. But I wanted to make money because I did not think that anyone was going to take care of me. So I did that, and I was successful, and I made money, but I was not happy. So when we say in DA, it's not about the money, it's not about the money. You know, and so I got my first credit card in graduate school, and everyone was getting them, and I got one. And our lunchtime speaker shared today, like, and I went with my friend. We both got them. They had a $2,000 limit, and I was like, I've got $2,000, you know. And she goes, but, and I was like, yeah, you know, like crazy. And she goes, Sharon, you know, you have to pay that back. I go, well, yeah, $25 a month. You know, I go, so what's the deal? You know, like, it's not that bad. And, you know, that didn't work out. I mean, it worked out for a while, and then it didn't work out. And then I actually lent the card to a friend because I was such a people pleaser. And they used it. And so, you know, I ended up paying it back. And then, you know, but in any event, so that's where I come from. And so I did. I had a great career. And then, but that wasn't enough because I didn't think that the career that I had was good enough. So I started a new career and took out tons of student loans for that. And then I got cancer, so I didn't finish that. But I got, so this is really important. So when I got my first job, it was in August of 1980. And I got my job. I was really excited, really nervous. And I was a drinker, you know, but not a really low bottom drinker, but, you know, weekend drinker, you know, but I couldn't drink, but, you know, I only, you know, periodic. So it was my birthday. We had a client in Massachusetts. I was like, oh, wow, what a great thing. We've got this gig in Massachusetts and it's my birthday and I know where to drink and let's all go there. So we did. And I was really inappropriate, you know, like not horrible, but like just like stuff that I shouldn't be doing, you know, new on the job. So my boss 12-stepped me the next day. He said, Sharon, you're an alcoholic, and we are going to an AA meeting tonight. And I was such a people pleaser that I said, okay. And all right, and this is where I'm going to try to tie things together a little bit. So it was in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Went to this church, and it's a huge church, a big AA church, well, 12-step church. And so we walked in, and I looked to my left, and I saw this man. And we had gone to a support group for liar boys that were lying about what was happening to them by, you know, the priests in our church. And this guy was there, and a classmate of mine, so we all had to go, and we all had to, you know, like, oh, these boys are so horrible, and they're all liars. And I was just like, oh, my God. But in any event, I look, and there's a man who was my classmate's father who had been in the support group. And this was a guy that I thought was definitely dead because he was that kind of an alcoholic, which that holds the cigarette and it kind of like nods off and, you know, the thing goes and, you know, and there he was with the glow of recovery. So it wasn't just him. They were doing what they call on the East Coast a commitment where they bring a meeting to a meeting. And so there, not only that, there were all these people and it was my first meeting. He goes, you're an AA. I go, no, this is my first meeting. The guy got tears in his eyes and he took me by the shoulders and said, you are home. And I get tears every time I think about this. And my boss is standing there because he's like, what the hell is going on here? So I'm like being introduced around to all the people from my hometown in Massachusetts. And I just was blown away. It turns out this guy was the speaker. They have raffles in Massachusetts. He entered the raffle, won the big book. I still gave it to me. He announced, you know, it was like crazy. I mean, how does this happen, right? I never saw this guy again. It was 5 minutes. Okay, thanks. So, all right, I'm going to segue with, I've got 5 minutes left, into the fact that what that did for me, so I got AA right away, October 15th, 1980, never looked back. What that gave me the opportunity to do is become a very high earner and a very high spender. I compulsively spent within my means for the better part of 35 years, not thinking I had a problem. All I did was change seats on the Titanic. And I'm just going to give a few short examples of my, the lowlights of my dadding. And the worst of them, I think, because I just didn't care. And the worst was, I shared this with someone the other day, I don't share it too often, but I was on a cruise with my mother and sister in Turkey, and I didn't care about the Blue Mosque, I didn't care about anything, all I cared about was the Grand Bazaar. So we went. And then we were like, my mother and sister were like, you know, we have to go. The ship is going to be leaving. I said, okay, you know what? Go to the hotel, get the stuff, and I'll meet you back there. Well, I missed the ship. But it didn't even matter to me. It did not matter. My mother and sister didn't. I bought a new ticket. I met them in Athens the next day. But this is the depths. I'm a low-bottom dadder, I did not care. I did not care. And even in my job, like, I worked when there were beepers, we didn't have cell phones, I would always say I was out of range. I was at sample sales in New York City. And every year my boss would give me a thing, in addition to like a nice bonus, he would give me a thing of batteries. Because I would say my beeper broke, I'm out of range, you know. And like, when I made that amend to him, he was like, oh my God, Sharon, of course I knew that you were, you know. But he goes, but you were working like 60, 70 hours a week, so I didn't really care. I said, you know what, no. I was supposed to be at the job during those times, you know, so I said, no, I still need to make an amend because I lied all the time. So I am running short on time, but I want to get to what has changed for me as a result of this program. So I'm a late bloomer. I used to go to my AA meetings in New York with shopping bags. People tried to 12-step me for a really long time. I was having none of it. I did finally come to DA about 10 years ago, and I didn't really believe that I had a problem because I didn't have any debt, and then I didn't really use credit cards. And then before I came into DA, I retired. I have a health issue. Chronic health issues, so I couldn't work like I used to be able to work, and I ended up retiring because I had 7 figures of retirement. I thought that's good, you know, that I'm good. And a lot of it I did spend on health issues, and I could say, oh yeah, it was because of my health issues. No, that is not true. I wasted a lot of money. I spent a lot of money, but today I do not regret that. That is where my higher power had to have me go. I exhausted all of my resources. Not only that, I had a relapse. Someone described a DA blackout. I had a DA blackout for a year. And then, just in case I didn't think I was a debtor, I got $70,000 in credit card debt. So, and then I came back, and my two dogs, one of whom sadly passed away yesterday, but the only reason I didn't kill myself in 2011, because I couldn't go on anymore. I couldn't do this. I could not do it. Was because I had two dogs that were a bonded pair, and I couldn't see that they were separated. I couldn't have them be separated. So I said, I'm going to give this stupid DA thing one more try. I had a head full of program and a pocket full of maxed out credit cards. And instead of me going on, I just want to read. I applied to be a trustee a few years ago, and I just want to read, and hopefully have enough time to do it, about why this program works for me, and this program saved my life. Okay, since returning from my relapse, being of service has been an integral part of my life. Service really is the secret. I have been able to retire from professional work and have gratefully chosen to spend time in service at meetings, on the phone, in PRGs, in local and world service with other recovering debtors. I try to just say yes when asked, with the caveat that my greatest form of service is maintaining my own solvency. I have come to believe that my higher power is my employer. I know that this is both the best job I have ever had and the greatest gift I could have ever received. I am committed to practicing what I believe should be our singular focus in DA, which is to avoid incurring unsecured debt. My experience has been that once I stopped using unsecured debt, my compulsive spending and the other symptoms of this disease began to slowly slip away. My goal in recovery is not to get rich or accumulate wealth, nor is it to live as frugally as possible. It is not about achieving some personal, creative, or professional goal, or promoting myself, nor is it about becoming famous or important. Success for me comes when I am humbly grateful for the abundance my higher power has already provided, and now that I'm realizing it has always been there. The past 7 years have been incredible. I feel like I'm truly sober for the first time in my life, often with the awe and wonder of a newcomer. We are never too old, and it is never too late to get recovery in DA. While maintaining a sober and solvent life, all of my needs, and even most of my wants, are met. Living within my means never feels like deprivation today. The desire to acquire and keep up with others has dissipated. The DA promises have and continue to come true for me. I feel more complete and content with my life today more than ever before, despite having significantly less income than I had in the past. Recovery in DA can be challenging, but has rewarded me with ongoing awareness and gratitude that I never knew was possible. Sometimes I want to shout about my DA blessings from the rooftops, but I realize that it is only by attraction, not promotion, that I can inspire hope in recovery for others. I'm grateful for the relapse which saved my life. Higher power always has perfect timing, even if it might not seem so at the time, like last night with my dog. I remain willing and able to be of service for this wonderful fellowship a day at a time in whatever capacity my higher power intends for me. You are my people. This is my program. Thank you for listening. God bless you all.